The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
The bottom line is this chamber must pass legislation to avoid a default. Accordingly, I will soon file cloture on the House-passed proposal that will suspend the debt limit until December of 2022. We aren't asking Republicans to support it when it comes time for a vote. We only ask that they get out of the way as Democrats pass it on our own, just as the majority party did in the early 2000s.
This unified Democratic government is having trouble governing. They couldn't even pass the bipartisan infrastructure bill, which the president negotiated and the Speaker of the House promised would pass last week. The majority needs to stop sleepwalking toward yet another preventable crisis.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, great to be with you today. The second voice, that last voice you just heard, was Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell criticizing the means by which Democrats are governing. Of course, you heard Chuck Schumer, the Democrat from New York, who's the Senate Majority Leader there. He's saying, look, we need a vote to raise the debt ceiling. And as you were probably following this, there's some news as I'm walking in the studio I want to share with you. But before I get to it, I'll give you a little background. We were really at a crossroads with Capitol Hill. The country's spending is going to reach its uppermost limit, and Congress has to figure out a way to raise the limit. And the Secretary Treasurer, or the Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, she's warned that our legislators, you know, should the country default on any of its obligations, that would trigger an immediate recession. And that is a real concern. There's a vote today in the Senate on a procedural issue for getting to a vote on the debt ceiling. And let me tell you what happened. The Senate GOP leader McConnell has now offered a short-term debt ceiling extension. And of course, many feel that this came as he received pressure from Joe Biden. But he offered just a short-term suspension of the U.S. debt ceiling just to avert what I was talking about, a national default, an economic crisis, until the Democrats are able to pass a more permanent solution. They have, I think, to the end of the year. And it's a mess on Capitol Hill. It really is. I hope we get this right. This is a statement that was posted on Twitter. He said, to protect the American people from a near-term Democratic-created crisis will allow the Democrats to use normal procedure to pass an emergency debt limit extension at a fixed dollar amount to cover current spending levels into December. This will mute Democrats' excuses about the time crunch that they've created and will give unified Democratic government more than enough time to pass a standalone debt limit legislation through reconciliation. Now, of course, that development came as President Biden and Democratic leaders in Congress amped up the pressure on Republicans to act on the debt limit. But most economists say that, you know, if the U.S. defaulted, it would spell economic calamity. You know, there's no doubt about that. I was watching a piece earlier today. We're just looking at the cost of things that are going up. And I don't want to scare people. I really don't. But you probably have seen it. I mean, I went to fill up two gas cans for my lawnmower and weed whacker and put some little bit of gas in the car. I couldn't believe how much it cost. You know, you're going to buy food or meat. I mean, you can really see the costs go up. And yet we want to spend more money. I'm so adverse. I think we need to be more conservative in our approach. You know, if Democrats accept McConnell's offer, the GOP will have basically blunted the chief line of attack from Democrats. You probably heard them saying, look, Republicans, they're standing in the way. Democrats are working to avoid this catastrophic default. So if they take the deal, then Democrats are also committing to raising instead of suspending the debt limit through a reconciliation bill. And suspension, you know, allows the government to float a new debt for a certain period of time instead of capping it at a certain dollar figure. So they're going to likely hike the ceiling to an enormous sum, somewhere north of $30 trillion. And we're already, what, $28 trillion worth of debt in our country. That's a lot of money. It is. If you ever look at these debt clocks and you see how fast the interest ticks away, it's absolutely amazing. And look, both Republicans and Democrats are responsible for total debt. You know, raising the limit, though, makes Democrats vulnerable in the next election they were in charge when we got into this mess. So we'll see what happens. Again, I go back. We're a great nation. We're a generous nation. We're the wealthiest nation in the world. Let's pray. Let's pray for our country and for those leaders that they'll be wise with your money, with my money, that we'll use it wisely, not waste it, not fund things that we shouldn't. And hopefully we can get this right. Speaking of debt, your kids, I don't know if they have any student loan debt or not. The first part of President Biden's plan to forgive student loan debt is now going into play. So you might want to turn up your radio. Maybe you've got some student debt. The Education Department announced that people who were on the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, you're going to get your loans forgiven. Check this out. Here's what The Hill had to say about this earlier today.
The Department of Education on Tuesday announced it would temporarily allow student borrowers to claim credit on all federal loan and repayment programs toward forgiveness. It said it was doing so, quote, to restore the promise of the Public Service Loan Forgiveness Program, which cancels student loans for individuals who have worked in qualifying public service for 10 years and made 10 years' worth of payments on federal loans. The program was designed to reward public service, but ED said that this promise often went, quote, unmet. The department called the change a limited PSLF waiver. It will expand the types of payments that student borrowers working in public service can count towards student loan forgiveness and will apply to those with direct loans, have consolidated into the direct loan program, or submitted an application into the direct loan program while the waiver is in effect.
So a little background for you. This was started in 2007 as an incentive for students to get into government work, when they could forego the private sector and work instead as a teacher or a police officer in the government. And after 10 years of, you know, paying on your student loans, if you were in this program, your loans would be forgiven. So you could probably refinance them, have a low payment. They're now affordable. You spread them out over a long period of time, and then the government just eats your remaining loan. The problem was, you know, people went to get that promised, you know, forgiveness, and it didn't come. USA Today was reporting that the Education Department is going to raise the debt of 22,000 borrowers to the tune of about $1.7 billion. And there was another 27,000 borrowers. So you could see almost $2.8 billion in debts being forgiven if you can prove that they were employed, you know, in an eligible job. I think working for a nonprofit covers you as well, but I don't know that for sure. Hey, you know, I saw a story I think you might find interesting. I don't know if you're flying again, if you're traveling. I don't know if you ever booked your flight using Google. You know, you type in where you want to go, gives you a whole bunch of different prices, different airlines. You know, you can change the price by changing the dates. Well, you're going to see something else now. You're going to start seeing green badges pasted near certain flight listings. And these badges indicate Google's belief that the flight will put out fewer carbon emissions than other flights. So if you want to make a difference in the environment, I mean, we know what air travel does, right, in terms of the carbon emission that's generated. USA Today was reporting that they're using data from the European Environmental Agency with flight-specific information that they're getting from the airlines. And, you know, they look at everything from the distance of your trip to the number of seats to the class. And it looks like you might be able to make a decision if you want to. I mean, they also report that choosing a supposedly greener flight may not mean a more expensive flight. That might remain to be seen. I think some people will do this even if it's more money. I think some people won't, because the bottom line is, you know, airlines tickets pretty pricey at times too. But Google had some audio from this new featured launch. I thought I'd share it with you. Listen.
After a year when many of us have stayed home, people are beginning to travel once again. And increasingly, they're considering sustainability. For example, we saw over the last decade that search interest for eco-hotel has doubled. That's why today, we're making it easier for people to see the environmental impact of their travel choices. First, we're bringing information on carbon emissions directly into Google Flights. When travelers search for flights on Google, they'll see the associated CO2 emissions for every flight directly in the search results. And we're putting these numbers in context by labeling flights that have significantly higher emissions and adding a green badge to flights with significantly lower emissions.
All right. So there you go. When you go and do a search for your flight, I guess you can be environmentally conscious if you want. Coming up in a few moments, I want to share with you a little bit about what's happening with China and Taiwan, and a headline and a threat that caught my attention today. And I pray for peace in the world. Our Lady in 1917, when she appeared to the Fatima children, told us to pray the rosary for peace. She knew about the rise of atheistic communism that was coming, the rise of Russia, the spread of her errors. And I think today, when it comes to China, we need to pray too, because, you know, Chinese state media was warning the U.S. that war might be triggered at any time over Taiwan. And I think that's a real call for prayer. So we'll talk about that. Pray the rosary. You can pray the rosary with Father Rocky at 7 p.m. tonight. We're praying for an end to the culture of death. And I know that deals with abortion, but it also deals with peace. A lot of life is lost in war. And one final note here before we talk about that. I want to get you plugged into something that I hope you'll take advantage of. You only have a couple days left to do this. I want to put it on your radar. Maybe you have not heard about it yet, but Relevant Radio is offering a very special gift to anybody who just wants to put their name in the hat. We've got 200 very beautifully hand-painted outdoor nativity sets that are valued at about $500. And the pieces are big. They're beautiful. And, you know, it's something you may want for the holidays. And look, maybe you don't want it. Maybe, you know, your kids or somebody you love could use this. Maybe you say, well, I got a nativity set. Why not sign up? It's free. We're going to give away 200 of these beautiful sets. And it's a great way to, as I said earlier, to really witness to and proclaim what the season is all about, to celebrate the incarnation, you know, God becoming man, the light coming into the world, you know, the beginning of that beautiful nativity story, if you will, where we see these figures of Joseph and Mary and their yes to God, and ultimately the nativity, you know, Christ being born. All that can be captured in this beautiful set. You know, you can feature it outside. You can keep it in your house if you want to. Mine is outside. I actually put this set outside with a light on it. I know some people have built like a little shelter, a little shed over it. But if you want it, it's yours free. And it's a great way, I think, to keep Christ in Christmas. Yours free. Go to relevantradio.com/Christmas. relevantradio.com/Christmas. Hey, I do want to talk to you about Taiwan. I want to follow up on that. And I don't know if you heard yesterday about China sending warplanes into Chinese airspace or into Taiwanese airspace. I mentioned this just briefly. They sent 52 different aircraft. China, of course, has always considered Taiwan to be a rogue province. A little history for you, right? Something that came about at the end of the Second World War because of the Chinese Civil War. The leaders of the Republic of China, they lost two communist leaders of the People's Republic of China, and 2 million of the Republic of China members evacuated to Taipei, which is, it's about 110 miles away from China's coast. And China has always wanted Taiwan back. And they've been increasingly, you know, putting pressure on Taiwan over the last several months to show that they mean business. And they're sending a message to the U.S. as well. Between Friday and Monday, and well, saber rattling, maybe flexing of one's military muscle. I don't know. China sent 150 warplanes over Taiwan, including just, I think it was 52 or 56 alone on Monday. I think the number was in the low 50s. Bottom line is 150 warplanes, right? Taiwan, of course, doesn't have nearly the military might that China does. And you know what? It would need our help. So the officials, Chinese officials, have issued a warning of a possible war. Beijing flew, as I said, that record number over Taiwan's air defense identification zone. Let me share with you a little bit. They did an interview, CBS did, with a Chinese correspondent in Hong Kong who was reporting on what was unfolding. Check this out.
There's been a tremendous uptick in activity over just the past few days. Do we know what has triggered this military action by China?
China and Taiwan are both caught between each other's national days. October 1st, last Friday, was China's 72nd anniversary of its founding. And that's when we saw that first flight of sorties, 38 sorties on Friday, 39 on Saturday, 16 on Sunday, and then at least 52 on Monday. And we're heading into the October 10th national holiday for Taiwan. That's when it celebrates its 110th anniversary of its founding. So there's a lot of tension, a lot of pride coming from China. And, you know, President Xi Jinping earlier this year said that one of his main goals was to reunify Taiwan with China. And we're trying to, and we're seeing this ramp up in terms of the actual physical behavior on the part of the Chinese People's Liberation Army. Now, looking ahead, we have about five more days. Taiwan is trying to react as best it can. It's scrambled its own jets, and it has deployed its air defense shield. But that's pretty much all they can do in the face of a more powerful military. China, many experts say, has the upper hand in this. Ever since the Civil War in 1949 ended between the nationalists and the communists, there has always been this chest beating on both sides, saying that at one time Taiwan would come back to reclaim China. But now, because China itself has become so strong politically as well as economically, the second most important economy in the world, the tables have turned. And through the presidents, through the past 70 years, it really is this narrative that's become nationalist, basically, that Taiwan must be returned to China at all costs. And if you try to engage with anyone in China, they say that this is a national prerogative and that this needs to happen.
Yeah, a national prerogative. Let me just, I want to go to my next guest, but let me just share with you what they said, because I think China is playing for keeps. Here's what one official news outlet recently said from China. He says, there's no force in the world, no force in the world whose will to defend Taiwan is stronger than Chinese will to fight against secession and achieve reunification. To be precise, they're completely incomparable. And the same paper also tweeted out this warning. Since Taiwan authorities are preparing for war, let's see whether Australia is willing to accompany Taiwan's separatist regime and become cannon fodder. That's what they said. Because Australia said, hey, we're going to give help. And the U.S. is committed to helping. Japan said they would get involved. Remember that? We talked about that in the past. China said they'd use nuclear weapons against Japan. So this is a powder keg. Here to give us some perspective is the author. Well, is it? But he's a Marine. He's served for 20 years. He's now Senior Research Fellow for Defense Programs at the Heritage Foundation and the author of their annual report, The Index of Military Strength, The Index of U.S. Military Strength. You can check it out there, and it's worth checking out. Hey, Dakota, thank you for your time. Good afternoon.
That's great to be with you, as always. Thanks.
Boy, this is something else. I thought of you earlier today when I was when I saw this story, when I saw these planes go over earlier in the week, and I thought, man, I wonder what he thinks about this. China's, you know, I don't know whether it's, you know, saber rattling or flexing the military muscles, I said earlier, or whether the threats are real. I mean, they're pretty ominous threats to both to Japan, to Australia, to the world. Would they be willing to carry out those threats?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think you provided the great context for it anyway, and the other folks you had recorded here on the show. This is a core issue for the communist regime in Beijing. I mean, you can't go a half a century or more, 70 years, talking about the imperative to reunify this renegade province of Taiwan with the mainland and then not follow through with that, right? So they've set lofty expectations. They are looking at their 100th anniversary coming up in 2045. And there are all these national strategic objectives. So it is absolutely a key issue for them to affect this reconciliation, or not reconciliation, but bringing them back under. The real question is, do they do that by force, coercion, intimidation, economic integration? And they push on all of those fronts. And it depends on the administration in Taiwan, whether it tilts towards Beijing or away. Right now, it's tilting away. And then the other thing that Beijing is concerned about is the demographic. You know, the current young folks up through about 50 years old in Taiwan have no affiliation with mainland China, whereas their parents or grandparents did. So you can see just demographically and culturally this growing divide, and Beijing is concerned about that as well.
Yeah, the president said yesterday that he spoke with President Xi Jinping and said that they agreed to observe what he called the Taiwan Agreement. Can you explain that? What exactly does it mean? Do we know what that agreement states, and will Xi be willing to do that?
Yeah, a few decades ago, the U.S. changed its official policy from recognizing two Chinas to just a single China, with Beijing being the government over the overall China. But Taiwan would not be brought under Beijing's orbit by force, right? So there is this guarantee or this assurance that Beijing or mainland China would not use military force to occupy or bring back Taiwan into the fold. And the United States has made these intentionally ambiguous assurances that it would step in to prevent that forceful reunification as well. So the strategic ambiguity was intentional. You know, when you draw a clear line, then your opponent knows exactly what you will or will not do. And so it's been this ambiguous sort of understanding. And that's what Biden was referring to, is that both sides would agree to continue with this arrangement where China wouldn't use force and the United States would step in if force was used. But that begs the question, you know, that you had raised earlier. If China decided to use force, who would really, you know, in the real world, commit military power to try to prevent that from happening? And that's the big question. You can't predict that.
Yeah, it's tragic, though, because, you know, the U.S., you know, has made a commitment to our allies. Taiwan's an ally,
yeah.
Japan, Australia, they're allies. We saw what happened in Afghanistan, and I think we lost a lot of cachet, a lot of credibility with the world.
Yeah.
And you saw China, actually, their state media and others saying, aha, Taiwan, they were saying to them, look, you know, will the U.S. really have your back in this? And then they turned to Japan saying, you know, don't get involved. You know, we'll turn you to glass. And then Australia, they're saying they're going to be fodder. Is the U.S. in any position right now to go up against China for Taiwan? Will we do that? Not just in terms of numbers and strategy, but also in terms of whether or not, you know, we have the will as a nation for that.
Well, I think in popular opinion, the will would be there, but going to war is a political decision. So, you know, look at what the Biden administration has and hasn't done. You know, we agreed to take back any arguments we had against Nord Stream 2 pipeline, which is the Russian-built pipeline going into Germany. We have taken off sanctions that we previously had in place on Iran. We haven't been as combative with North Korea. This horrific withdrawal from Afghanistan, how it was handled. So, you know, the U.S. government currently is not playing a real good game on the global stage, and Beijing is exploiting that. You know, all the things that you just mentioned, hey, look at what happened in Afghanistan, Taiwan. Do you think the U.S. is going to be there for you? So the physical ability to intervene, yes. The popular willingness of the U.S. public, I think that would be there. Will this current administration step in? And I think that is very doubtful. And it's this measure of doubt which actually can precipitate, you know, a war where Beijing looks at Washington, D.C. as being weak and not having the will. And they think to themselves, maybe this is a good opportunity to move before a different administration gets into office. And China's dealing with its own financial crises, you know, its real estate market. It's now having rolling power outages across the country. It's very aggressive approach to militarizing its foreign policy here in the last 10 years or so has caused pushback by Japan and Vietnam and others who are now investing in their own defenses. So all that to say, I'm sorry I'm being kind of long on this, but all this to say that it could be a closing window of opportunity that spurs China to act in ways that we all hope that it does not.
I've got about 30 seconds for you. Final thought. Is there any way we can de-escalate this situation with Taiwan?
To show a strong hand, you know, where we have a weak military in terms of capacity, we have programs that are not being fully funded. We're now into a continuing resolution, right, which is a loss of spending power. We've got the smallest military we've had, you know, since
Dakota, I got to hold it. I got to hold it right there. Thank you for being with me. Sorry about that. I wish we had a little bit more time. I'll be right back.
96% of the law enforcement agencies concur that the fentanyl and the meth that are coming into Idaho are sourced in Mexico.
How bad is it?
It's bad, and it's getting worse because it's getting to be more and more abundant, and it's getting to be cheaper.
Last year, over 90,000 Americans died from drug overdoses, and the two primary drugs that they overdose on are fentanyl and methamphetamine. Those drugs come from one place, and that's south of our border. Just in the last year, we had several overdose deaths. The people that are manufacturing this fentanyl, that are bringing this fentanyl across the border, and that are selling it, absolutely know that it kills people.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, it's a poison, that's for sure. That was Fox News interviewing Idaho Governor Brad Little and Idaho State Police Captain John Kempf about the drug trafficking problems that the state's seeing due to the border crisis. And yeah, the stuff's coming across our southern border, no doubt about it. We have a porous border, we know that. But also a lot of this, as experts are saying, is being manufactured in China. This is a poison. It is a toxin in the blood of America, and it is killing people, and not just drug users. I've seen reports where police officers who pull someone over, or they deal with some of these things, they end up dying from, you could die from just a dose the size of the tip of a pencil. I mean, it's ridiculous. Police right now in the town of Perris, California, they arrested two people. They charged them with intent to distribute a drug called carfentanil. It's a fentanyl-type drug, but it's so much more deadly. When the police were explaining it, they said that, this fentanyl, it's 50 times more potent than heroin. 50 times more potent than heroin, 100 times more potent than morphine. It only takes about 2 milligrams of this fentanyl to be fatal. And that's why, thank God for Narcan and some of these other things. It saves, officers' lives. It saves individuals' lives. This is unprecedented. It really is. It's in everything from Xanax to a whole bunch of other things that's now being smuggled over. And look, your loved ones, if they suffer with addiction, I mean, there's a lot of kids who don't do drugs. They try this for the first time, end up dead. Carfentanil is 100 times more powerful than fentanyl, 10,000 times more potent than morphine, and a lethal dose of carfentanil in humans would be at the nanogram level. Okay, so I know it's a lot of numbers. Fentanyl, 50 times more potent than heroin, 100 times more than morphine. Carfentanil, 100 times more powerful than fentanyl, 10,000 times more potent than morphine. And like I said, a lethal dose of this is at the nanogram level. The district attorney said that, the drugs that are laced with this drug, they could have killed 50 million people. Look, that should set off alarm bells for everyone in this country. We really, let's put immigration aside. Let's put aside, migrants and illegal migrants and refugees. Let's just talk drugs for a minute, okay? If we do anything, we need to secure our borders just because this poison is killing innocent people. This poison is killing our country. It's killing our children. And we cannot have porous borders like that where cartels are getting this crap, this junk, this poison across our borders. The Drug Enforcement Agency spent the last 2 months investigating people who were selling drugs laced with fentanyl. And last week, they announced that they made 800 arrests across the country. They seized about 1.8 million pills. Think about that. In the schools of our kids, on the streets of our cities. 1.8 million pills that were contaminated with this deadly drug. Now, the DEA agents actually blamed, guess what? And guess who they blamed? Facebook and Snapchat. That's who they blamed. DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, says, hey, Facebook and Snapchat, we got to take a deeper dive into them because that's where a lot of these drugs are found. And those social media companies, they're not doing anything about it. They know that this is happening on their platforms, but they're like, nothing we can do. Not our fault. So down on the southern border, the drug cartels are apparently using this chaos, this disarray down there, which is moving border agents out of commission. They're moving from one area to deal with the migrants on another. And when that happens, and when you get situations like the Mounted Patrol photograph trying to keep Haitian migrants from entering the country and claims that they were, you know, whipping the migrants with horse reins, the cartels love that. You know, they actually want to provoke that kind of thing. So why? Well, the administration will pull more personnel off the line in other areas and reinforce, you know, those areas where the high populations of migrants are coming in. So what happens? The cartels then run their drugs into our country. There were some experts to say they just drove across the border with this junk, right? The problem we're seeing, though, is that there is a demand. We wouldn't have this many drugs in our country if there wasn't a demand. You know, there wouldn't be a supply coming in, but you know, something's very wrong in our country. And drug use is heading back up as people, I think, seek a way to numb themselves against all their difficulties. And I want to talk about it today, too. I'd love to hear your own experience. Maybe you've encountered, you know, the run-in with this fentanyl or carfentanil, or maybe you've lived down on the border. Maybe you're a DEA agent. Maybe you can share with us a little bit of what you see. I'm joined right now by Deacon Ernie Martinez. He was a narcotics police officer and an at-large representative to the National Narcotics Officers Association Coalition. Right now he serves in Notre Dame Parish in Denver as a deacon. It's good to have him and have his expertise here. Deacon, good afternoon. Thanks for being with me.
Of course, Drew. Thank you. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon. You know, these numbers are staggering to me. They cause me great trepidation. I know a lot of families deal with addiction. This type of stuff, whether you're an addict or whether you're just a kid in high school wanting to party, can kill you. Those were just three random stories that I came across, and I love your take on it. Is it an exaggeration to say that the drug problem is getting worse in the country, and what do you make of this new super deadly type of poison that's now coming in?
I think it's underestimated, and I tell you what, it's spot on to the degree that the reality is truly uglier than what's reported. Yes, the potency numbers that you gave are absolutely correct. But we've started seeing fentanyl in its entirety enter the United States about 10 years ago. And we started seeing the cartels really taking advantage of the downward departure of heroin use at that time. So they started lacing heroin, traditional heroin that's made in and cultivated from the original poppy seed in Mexico. It was cheaper. And they started giving it away to gain more of an addiction to the populace of people in America. And then they started partnering with China because China has all the precursors around. At that time, America was fighting against precursor chemicals with all the meth lab issues that we've had over the last 20 years prior. So we had success with state legislatures and U.S. Congress to actually hold back and stop precursor chemicals from being transported as easily as they can to purchase those type of things. So Mexico took over that void, and they have for the last 20 years. It's just good timing, Drew, that we're talking about this, because I just completed a three-day summit in Vail, Colorado, with colleagues across the country, state, local, and federal agents that are the tip of the spear that are combating illegal drugs coming over the southwest border. We were briefed by a few colleagues that as of last week, the border situation around Laredo and everywhere else along that southwest corridor is truly exacerbated by what's going on with the immigration piece. The immigration piece is concomitant with illegal drugs being poured into our borders. The cartels are highly effective. They are very, very influential and powerful, very violent, and quite frankly, they're running the Republic of Mexico. So fentanyl is taking over where traditional heroin has had its dominance for the past 50 years in America. And unfortunately, we're starting to see people dying of this because it is powerful. We have college kids that are going to a party, and all of a sudden, why don't you try this? It's going to make you feel good. And they get these synthetic opioid pills, and they'll take one. And all of a sudden, they're in an overdose situation, and we have deaths across the country. It's not just in the southwest part. It's not just in Idaho. It's all the way to the Northeast and states along the Midwest. So fentanyl has affected every state in the United States. And it's unfortunate that it's so powerful, but you're right. People are seeking some type of outlet that don't have an outlet of a strong faith relationship with God to hold them back from maybe being a little open to try things that they don't know too much about.
You're right about that. You know, I there's so much to talk about here. We'll take a few calls for you in a second, but I just, you know, when I was, I've been aware of fentanyl and how powerful and how deadly it is, you know, how much more powerful than it is, 100 times more potent than morphine and 50 times more powerful than heroin, but carfentanil. I mean, you take a look at that, 10,000 times more potent than morphine. I don't understand this, and maybe you can explain it to me, because why would a cartel or anyone try to push a drug where a nanogram of the stuff can kill you? It doesn't make sense. Aren't they killing their market off? Is this deliberate on the part of China or some other entity that wants to kill Americans? I mean, I don't know. I'm throwing this out to you. What's your sense of why something as lethal as this would be pushed across the borders?
Sure. Carfentanil really came about because there's it's interesting how the addicted mind works. And you're always chasing that first euphoric high when you're high. I mean, I spent years undercover buying heroin and really attacking heroin groups and organizations in the Denver metro area for a number of years. So I understand the addiction to heroin and opioids for the last 30 years. The unfortunate thing is you're never going to get that first euphoric type of feel after your first shoot up of heroin. But now you have so many conveyances of synthetic opioids that take that place where you could ingest it and not just shoot it up, you could ingest it orally. You could smoke it. So the thing is when you find something more powerful as a distributor like the cartels do, their profit margins expand because very small amounts could be sold at microgram units. And it's an economics 101 type of thing. You sell more, smaller product, you get more money. It's scalable all the way to the nth degree. But they don't care about life. Life is cheap. And these distributors and these cartel members do not care about anything about Americans. All they want to do is make money. All they want to do is, you know, is push power, and all they want to do is control. And that's all they want. They could care less about innocent kids, innocent young adults in America trying something for the first time and dying, because there's going to be people that are going to take their place to try their drugs and to be addicted. No. Most heroin users will never get off of heroin, unfortunately, because we have such a lack of effective drug treatment programs in America. That's the sad thing about it. My heart goes out to addicts, and it always has been, because there is not one iota of a chance unless you have that accountability piece of enforcement. We've talked to colleagues in the southwest border with this immigration thing. Yep. They're told by this administration to stand down on enforcement. That's why we're seeing what we're seeing.
Terrible. Terrible. So frustrating. Deacon, I have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll grab some calls for you. The number is 888-914-9149. And I'm with you on that. I know somebody personally that has battled a heroin opioid addiction. And, you know, I think our prisons are filled with people like that, when I think so often their life is robbed because of the drugs. We need to find a way to get treatment and help for those who have these deep hooks embedded in them, this hook of addiction. When we come back, we'll take a few more of your calls. Feel free to join us. I'll be right back. The Relevant Radio studio line is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters. Information about employment opportunities and their flexible premium life insurance plans available at relevantradio.com/Forrester. Hey, thanks for joining me. We'll pray the Chaplet of Divine Mercy in about 10 minutes. Right now, if you are just tuning in, we're taking a look at the opioid crisis in America, and it continues to escalate. Part of the problem is the porous border. As Deacon Martinez has pointed out, you know, I think people, sometimes when you don't have God in your life, you're willing to supplement something else. You're willing to engage in behavior maybe you shouldn't if you don't have a good moral code. And I think also sometimes people try to medicate. They try to also, you know, fill the void that is missing with something that could maybe give them a little pleasure. And that's unfortunate. We see the incredible devastation that addiction wreaks, not just on the individual, but on families and on the nation at large. Deacon Ernie Martinez is a deacon at Notre Dame Parish in Denver, but he's also a narcotics police officer and an at-large representative to the National Narcotic Officers Association Coalition. And he's here sharing with us his own expertise and insight. And let's go right to the phones. I know a lot of people want to join the conversation. This is a poison in our country. I hope we secure the border and do something to protect our children. Jacob in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, thanks for waiting around with the deacon.
Hey, thank you so much for coming. I'm a former police officer in Nashville, Tennessee, and former military cop before that. I have some opinions on this, and I can't prove any of this. It's just my opinion, but I think we need to look more into this. Being more like a closed-loop system is the way I want to put it. I think immorality runs pretty rampant in our government. I've seen some certain things that I, just put a bad taste in my mouth. And so what I want to say is that, we should look into, the money behind this and see if it's, the hand that's harming us is the hand that's providing this to us. And by that I mean, I think if you look in Afghanistan, right, the opioid production, and there are some bases in Afghanistan, one in Kosovo, doesn't allow inspections and never has. I think that we need to look in to see if this government that, we support with our tax dollars is actually involved in the trafficking of drugs to communities because of the money that can be made by keeping people in the court systems for minor drug infractions over and over and over again. I saw that routinely as a cop, and that it's a big money item. And if we don't, even if the cartels, like he said, and I agree, don't care about human life, right. I think for a lot more people than we believe, like the cartels, there are others that don't care about human life. And we've seen it with this government, even looking into things like abortion. They don't care about human life.
You're right. Hey, it's a great point, Jacob. We have only a few minutes, so let me let Deacon Martinez respond to you. Go right ahead.
Sure. Thanks, Drew. So the money is always an important factor, right? But if you look at the sentencing reductions, you look at even where President Trump started letting violent offenders out of federal prison on the First Step Act, we even have a conservative, quote-unquote, president that, is letting violent offenders back out in the street to curry favor for a segment of the voting public. But at the same time, you have the cartels that are making the money on this thing. But at the same time, they're the ones, in my opinion and others' opinion, as subject matter experts are saying, that the cartels are truly having the influence over the government of Mexico. Case in point, when Chapo Guzman was arrested and brought to the United States and eventually convicted, his sons kind of wanted to run the Sinaloa cartel. But the thing is they arrested his son after a lengthy investigation, and the supporters of the cartel threatened the president of Mexico to release this son of Chapo, or else they were going to kill everybody in the town that they arrested him in. What happened?
Wow.
The president of Mexico, instead of sending his military and the Marines and everybody else to enforce this arrest of somebody who's taken over the cartel, they release him. So money has power. The cartels have power. Yes, there are certain politicians in this country that are taking certain amounts of money from different areas, including the big marijuana. I call it the cartel because legalization, normalization has been pushed on marijuana. That's exacerbating things with addiction. Because there isn't one person who hasn't tried any type of hard drug that 95% of them haven't tried marijuana first. So there's a correlation to it that's been proven over the last 10 years with data, with interviews and those types of things, drug courts and court records and transcripts. So that's my answer to that.
Well, Deacon, you actually are in the first state to legalize recreational marijuana. What are you seeing in the state of Colorado? Is it having an impact on how people view illegal drugs, or are you seeing a rise in these more serious drugs?
Yeah, unfortunately, we do share that distinction with the state of Washington. We're seeing the correlation of states that have legalized marijuana, whether it's for the so-called medical marijuana or recreational. We're starting to see opioid use and overdoses higher in those states than in any other states that haven't. So the science is starting to shine a light on the correlation between marijuana use and opioid use. You know, let's put a picture to this to this loss of life every year to opioid overdoses and deaths. If you fill an NFL stadium for a regular Sunday game, that's typically anywhere from 80 to 100,000 people in those stands. Well, take all those people and all those seats. That's how many lives we're losing each year in America, and it's rising each year to deaths from opioid use. Those are our first-time users. Those are long-time users, mid-time users. That really puts a visual to it, and that's when I go make my talks and presentations. I throw that at people, and it's like it's the slap in the face. Yeah, what's right. The government doing?
I was going to say, think about how many 9/11s that is, right? We lost, 3,000 Americans? Somewhere in that range?
Absolutely.
You know, this drug epidemic makes 9/11 pale in comparison.
Oh, absolutely. You know, since 9/11, we haven't had a foreign attack on U.S. soil, right? Thank God. But yet, since 9/11, we've had a chemical attack on our soil every day on the streets of America by these cartels pushing all these drugs to our kids and getting them addicted, killing them in instances, and it happens every day. But what are we doing about it? What is the government doing about it? But letting drug offenders out, a revolving door of the judicial system, saying that police are targeting minorities, which isn't true at all. Just throwing out a bunch of propaganda that's untrue, but yet we have a very uninformed, ill-informed voting public. You know, we only average, 48 to 50% of registered voters vote on anything in the United States anymore. So not only do we have an apathetic voting public, but we have a very ill-informed voting public. And that's sad.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
So, well, let's... you know, it was seen there in there that said that the glory of man, the glory of God is man fully alive. And the life of man is vision of God. Unfortunately, we don't have a lot of people fully alive in God these days. In this secular world, we are just losing that face of God. And we, as practicing Catholics, practicing Christians, need to start pushing the truth out.
Right. Well, Deacon, I think I got to leave you there. Your audio is breaking up a little bit on us, but I'm really grateful for your insight, your service both to the church and especially to this country. And you and I will talk again. Thank you for being here, and thanks for making time for us.
You bet, Drew. Thank you. God bless.
God bless you. That's Deacon Ernie Martinez from Martinez. We will pray. The chaplain coming up, I want to pray for him, his intentions, and, of course, his safeties. And my apologies to everyone who's on hold, too. I mean, I have about a moment left. I just want to invite you now, if you'd like to quickly make that phone call and get in, if you have an intention, a need, if you have a desire that you've been praying for and you just need some extra prayer power, we're here for you. The number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. And, of course, Maggie will take your calls off of our Twitter account, too. It's at Drew Mariani Show. You can put your petitions there. Email me, drew@relevantradio.com. And, of course, most importantly, pray with me. All right? So feel free to do it. This is a very, I think, special time of the day. You can always pray the chapel with me. You can pray the rosary a little bit later with Father. But this is an anointed hour. We see such wonderful fruit take place every day when we gather together, when you and I pray and we go before our Heavenly Father. So let's do that. We'll pray for your needs when I return. All right? We'll trust in the great mercy of God.